It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News Team. Now, here's what's happening.
Hot enough for you? Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. It could get dangerously hot in parts of the listening area today. The National Weather Service office in Buffalo issuing a heat advisory for much of western New York this afternoon, with heat index values expected to touch 100 degrees in some areas. They suggest making sure you're well hydrated and keeping strenuous outdoor activities to a minimum to guard against heat-related illnesses. This is all part of a sweltering weather system that's been breaking records across the Midwest.
This morning, the fight to stay cool, getting tougher nationwide. 62 million people from the Midwest down to Florida facing heat alerts with soaring temperatures.
NBC's Morgan Chesky. Chicago hit 100 degrees Tuesday. St. Louis, 99. Nashville setting a new record at 97 degrees. Our portion of that heat wave is expected to break later today, though, after a strong cold front plows through, triggering strong storms in some areas as it does. That front triggered at least two tornadoes in the Midwest yesterday. This Wisconsin farmer assessing the damage to his mother's property.
I think it must have been straight line because they move a 48-foot prefab house off its cinder blocks.
Family Life meteorologist Kevin Williams is tracking the heat situation and any severe weather outbreaks this afternoon. We'll check in with him later in this newscast. Stormy weather also impacting resumption of U.S.-made baby formula at a key plant in Michigan. CBS's Anne-Marie Green says this time the problem there is bad weather.
Severe storms Monday flooded the plant. It comes less than 2 weeks after production resumed following a months-long closure due to contamination and safety concerns. That led to the nationwide formula shortage. Abbott says that production of new formula will be delayed now for a few weeks.
FDA Commissioner Robert Califf told senators the FDA is working closely with Abbott to get that plant fully functional again. The Sturgis plant went back online less than 2 weeks ago after shutting down earlier this year over the possible contamination of formula. Abbott is the country's largest formula producer. After consistently blaming Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine as the big reason behind high fuel prices, the White House seems to now be focusing on American oil companies. Yesterday, President Biden firing off a letter to those company CEOs telling them to invest record profits back into production to bring consumer prices down.
We see it as a patriotic duty. As we've talked about, there's war. What they have been doing is taking advantage of the war. We are calling on them to do the right thing, to be patriots here.
White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre. Texas Senator Tom Cotton, though, says the timing of this new focus on the oil companies is a bit suspicious to him.
It's also very coincidental that all these oil company executives became so greedy just when Joe Biden took office. He and all those other Democrats said they were going to phase out fossil fuels. They were going to declare war on oil and gas in America.
Wall Street opened sharply lower this morning, a day after the Federal Reserve announced it was raising rates, the rate hike of 75 basis points, the largest since 1994. While that three-quarter point hike was expected by many U.S. analysts, the move is getting mixed reaction from overseas markets. CBS's Carter Evans on what all of that economic turmoil might mean to your personal economics.
So far, interest rates are up 1.5% this year. That means a loan for the average new car price of $47,000 will cost almost $60 a month more in interest than last year. And more expensive loans could discourage spending, which will reduce the insatiable demand now driving inflation.
People are looking for any way they can these days to try to save a buck.
Honestly, I've been looking at TikToks on how people like grow their own produce at this point, just because it's getting so expensive to go and buy it from the store.
Indeed. A top White House economist, though, insists the U.S. economy is well positioned to handle this soaring inflation.
The president has said not only is bringing down inflation his number one priority, but he has laid out a very specific plan for the steps that he can take and the steps that he needs Congress to work with him on.
Brian Dee says inflation's a growing problem around the world, not just here. He cited ongoing supply chain problems that grew out of the height of the COVID pandemic. Dee says the foundation of the U.S. economy is strong, with solid job growth, low unemployment, and a declining deficit. Ford Motor Company issuing a huge recall of nearly 3 million vehicles due to a transmission defect. A message from the National Highway Transportation Safety Board says the shifter cable to the transmission can detach and prevent the driver from shifting into the proper gear. The result would leave the operator thinking the vehicle's in park. It would actually be in a different gear and could roll away. This recall covers certain model years of Ford Escapes, C-Max vans, Fusions, Transit Connect vans, and Edge SUVs. Owners will be notified about the repair process beginning June 27th. COVID shots for little kids look like they're on the way soon.
I have grandchildren in this age group, and I think they and their parents have been waiting for this.
Epidemiologist George Rutherford and FDA panels recommending both Pfizer and Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine for kids under 5. We get more now from Mark Mayfield.
The recommendation applies to children as young as 6 months. The 21-member panel's decision is expected to be quickly authorized by the FDA. After that, a CDC panel will meet on Friday and Saturday. It's expected they'll also give the green light, sending the matter on to CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky. Once she signs off, it's possible that shots in arms can begin as soon as next Tuesday. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The California man accused of plotting to kill Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh is under federal indictment in Maryland. Brian Shook has that story.
A grand jury returned an indictment charging Nicholas John Roski with attempting to assassinate a justice of the United States. Authorities say the Simi Valley man was armed with a gun and knife when he was arrested last week near Kavanaugh's Maryland home. Roski reportedly told investigators he planned to kill Kavanaugh and then himself. The 26-year-old faces up to life in prison if convicted. I'm Brian Shook.
Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz says the White House deserves at least some of the blame for that attack.
We saw a Supreme Court Justice, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, threatened and a man arrested for attempted murder. Why? Because the left-wing radicals knew where his home was, and the White House was encouraging those radicals to go to his home where they were threatening his children. It's been a week, and Joe Biden still has not condemned the attempted murder of a sitting Supreme Court Justice.
Now to Ukraine. President Biden's earmarked more assistance for that embattled nation.
The United States will provide an additional $1 billion security assistance package for Ukraine.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. Meanwhile, two Americans among missing soldiers in Ukraine. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
We discourage Americans from going to Ukraine and fighting in Ukraine. It is a war zone. It's combat.
The mother of one of those two missing U.S. vets explains why he went to fight with the Ukrainians.
He felt very strongly that Putin needed to be stopped because he said Putin is not going to be satisfied with just part of Ukraine or even all of Ukraine.
Still to come now on the Noon Report, the U.S. Attorney General stops in Buffalo, another gubernatorial debate on tap tonight in New York, and the debate over arming teachers in Pennsylvania schools.
A very good afternoon to all. I'm Kevin Williams, keeping an eye on the sky. Another round of thunderstorms for some of us coming this afternoon and this evening. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Now checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. The U.S. Attorney General in Buffalo yesterday announcing hate crime charges against the Buffalo mass shooting suspect.
We will be relentless in our efforts to combat hate crimes, to support the communities terrorized by them, and to hold accountable those who perpetrate them.
Merrick Garland paying his respects at the Tops grocery store and then meeting with a family of victims and survivors before speaking about the charges to be filed. He emphasized that it's the duty of the Justice Department to protect Americans from violence fueled by hate. Garland noted that DOJ is looking forward to assisting Congress as it drafts new gun legislation and said an 18-year-old shouldn't be able to buy a gun. Democrats running for New York governor face off tonight in their final debate before the primary later this month. Scott Brinkle reports.
Governor Kathy Hochul, Long Island Congressman Tom Suozzi, and New York City public advocate Jamani Williams will discuss the issues on NBC4 starting at 7 o'clock. Hochul is the clear frontrunner as she tries to win her first full term. Now, she just got endorsed yesterday by New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Early voting starts Saturday. The primary is June 28th. Scott Pringle, NBC News Radio, New York.
A second arrest has been made in connection with the discovery of a man's body in a parking lot behind Geneva Hospital. Police have charged 24-year-old Lucretia Ristretti with manslaughter and concealment of a human corpse, the same crimes 21-year-old Kiara Scott is accused of committing. Officials say 44-year-old Keith Morlang suffered a medical emergency earlier this month, but instead of getting him to treatment, The two suspects just left him in the parking lot. A majority of New Yorkers call crime a serious problem facing the state, and many are worried they could be a victim of crime themselves. This according to a new Siena College poll out this morning. Concerns over public safety in New York cut across political affiliation, age, gender, race, and geography, according to the survey of over 800 registered voters. At the same time, voters remain split over whether to elect Governor Kathy Hochul to a full term later this year or support a generic alternative candidate. Most voters continue to believe New York is heading down the wrong track. This poll was conducted June 7 to 9, has a margin of error of 3.9 percentage points. On crime, 63% called it a serious concern for them, very serious, in fact. That includes over 60% of Democrats, Republicans, and independents. Voters also remain in a sour mood about the state and the nation overall. Just over half believe the state of New York's headed in the wrong direction. 68% believe the country as a whole is headed in the wrong direction as well. Hopefully the heat will break and the storms will pass before thousands of runners take to the streets of Buffalo later today as they compete in the J.P. Morgan Chase Corporate Challenge. The 3.5-mile race is scheduled to start at 6:25 p.m. at Delaware Park. They have a few roads that will be closed beginning at 5 near the park. Proceeds from this year's race will be donated to a Ukrainian culture center. Now to Pennsylvania. New polling gives an idea of where the key Pennsylvania political contests stand. Results of a Suffolk University USA Today poll released this week show Democratic Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman leading Republican Mehmet Oz 46-37% in the race for the U.S. Senate. The race for governor appears to be a tighter contest, with Democratic State Attorney General Josh Shapiro holding a lead of less than 2% over Republican State Senator Doug Mastriano, 44% to 40.2%. Oz making the rounds in the Keystone State yesterday, stopping in Johnstown. He told WJAC he's relieved to be past the grueling primary election process.
I was warned before this whole campaign started that the primary is a bit of character assassination because you're arguing with people you fundamentally agree with on policy. The general election's a much more joyous process for me because I get to talk about what I love speaking to America about, what I've been doing my whole career, which is what are the big decisions we have to make as a nation.
While he's out on the trail, his opponent Fetterman off the trail after suffering a stroke related to a heart issue just before the primary election. Fetterman Zoomed with President Biden this week ahead of the president's visit Tuesday to Philadelphia. Oz says Fetterman would be fit health-wise for office but feels he's unfit based on his views. Many groups have converged on Harrisburg to let lawmakers know how to spend many millions of dollars in a state surplus. That money comes from a federal COVID fund as well as increased tax revenues. Stakeholder groups would like to see the money invested in initiatives such as education, a minimum wage boost, and addressing poverty. The state budget deadline is June 30th, but officials reportedly have about a year and a half to spend those remaining COVID funds. Pennsylvania State Senator and Republican gubernatorial candidate Doug Mastriano says he'll soon introduce a bill to allow teachers to be armed in PA schools. Mastriano's memo seeking co-sponsorship says the measure would protect classrooms better. Pennsylvania State Teachers Association President Rich Askey tells Jet TV that Mastriano's plan gets an F.
The problem begins with the fact that people are bringing guns into schools. The answer is not to bring even more guns into schools. And we need to remember that education is so important that our kids, this is just the wrong environment for our kids to be educated in.
Nearly 30 states already have similar laws in place. Pennsylvania's state university system has passed a new funding formula.
The state system is at a pivot point. We cannot continue as we have been.
The move Wednesday overhauls the way hundreds of millions of dollars in state money are allocated each year to campuses in a bid to better promote student success, including that of poorer students and underrepresented minorities. Chancellor Dan Greenstein tells ABC 27.
It's not about preserving our system or our universities or... It's about the state of Pennsylvania. What kind of society do you want to live in?
The system is asking state lawmakers for an extra $200 million in aid for lower and middle income students who've been priced out of school. And the Little League World Series is being released in August as a licensed video game again. First time in 12 years that has happened. Little League World Series Baseball 2022 has been developed by Iguanabe and published by Game Mill Entertainment. It will be available for Nintendo Switch, PlayStation, Windows PC through streaming, and the Xbox. Promoters say players will be able to take one of 20 fictional teams in a championship mode that includes a representation of Howard J. Labonte Stadium in South Williamsport, Pennsylvania, the site of Little League's United States and World Series championship games. All right, that brings us, appropriately enough, to a check of sports. Here's Randy.
Good
afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Mark, we begin on the ice. The Colorado Avalanche got an overtime goal from Andre Burakovsky and beat Tampa Bay 4-3 in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals. The Lightning trailed 3-1 after one, but stormed back to force the overtime before Burakovsky's goal ended their comeback bid for a victory. To baseball, the Houston Astros made history last night in Texas. They became the first team ever to throw two immaculate innings in one game. An immaculate inning, nine pitches, all of them strikes, and three strikeouts. Making the two innings even more improbable, it was the same three batters who struck out in both innings. And yeah, the Astros won the game 9-2. Yanks held on to win their sixth straight, 4-3 over Tampa Bay. Aaron Judge hit his 25th home run of the season. Boston, Toronto, Minnesota, and the White Sox also won. Over in the National League, Brian Reynolds was clutch for the Pirates. After blowing a four-run lead, Reynolds hit a two-run home run in the seventh. The Bucs salvaged the final game of the four-game series against St. Louis 6-4. That ends their nine-game losing streak. Garrett Stubbs went deep for the Phillies. Kyle Gibson pitched one-run ball over eight innings. Phils beat Miami 3-1. Mets got walloped by Milwaukee 10-2. The Braves won their 14th straight 8-2 over Washington. Arizona and San Diego also winners. Interleague winners, the Dodgers, Guardians, and Royals. The U.S. Open Golf Championship begins today at Brookline, and Golden State will try to close out the Celtics in the NBA Finals in Game 6 in Boston. That is a look at sports.
Thank you, Randy. Still to come on the Noon Report, Elon Musk's election prediction, a look at the FafeX initiative, and tough times at Revlon.
As G.K. Chesterton observed, when people stop believing in God, the problem is that they believe in nothing, but that they'll believe in anything. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stonestreet. This is Breakpoint. For much of history, people have marked deaths and marriages with religious ceremonies and sacraments. But in a time of rapidly declining religiosity, some are now looking to alternative spiritual authorities to give meaning to these very important moments. Spiritual authorities like, say, Mickey Mouse. Recently, there was a Reddit post by a newlywed couple that went viral. They asked whether it was implied to spend their entire catering budget for their wedding on an appearance by Mickey and Minnie Mouse. Quote, "My fiance and I are huge Disney fans," wrote the 28-year-old bride. "We travel to Disney World as much as we can throughout the year. Disney's such an important part, not only to us, but also our marriage." Well, the bride and groom chose to pay for a 30-minute appearance from performers dressed as the iconic characters rather than buy food for their wedding guests. Not surprisingly, some in attendance took umbrage, as did people online who read the post, calling the couple childish and selfish. A professor of religious studies at Lehigh University, however, defended the couple and urged her Twitter followers to, quote, "stop pathologizing Disney adults." Here's what she had to say. "Many of the Disney fans I've observed in person and online find immense meaning in the parks. People don't just marry at Disney. They mourn lost relatives at Disney. They go to Disney to celebrate surviving cancer. They go there for one last trip before they die. Religion is a way of making meaning in the world through stories and rituals. It's about a network of relationships with the human and non-human. It's about making homes and confronting suffering. All of this happens at Disney," end quote. Well, the professor is correct that some people do view Disney and its theme parks in religious terms. Not that long ago, in fact, reports emerged that Disney was secretly working to stop guests from scattering the ashes of their deceased loved ones around the parks. Apparently, urns of human remains are so often emptied, employees have developed code words to warn of that kind of cleanup. Of course, Disney's just one of many religious alternatives on offer in a culture like ours. We could just as easily question the amount of money spent on sports or travel or distractions of various kinds. People who look to the state or to the screen or to sex for meaning and purpose are just as lost as those who look to Disney for it. There's also the matter of how religion is understood in a secular society. If, as the professor wrote, religion is a way of making meaning in the world through stories and rituals, well, then Disney fits that description. But this assumes that religious faith is purely subjective, based in fiction, not reality, a product of the imagination, not reason. If religion is merely a way of making meaning in an otherwise meaningless universe, well, then Mickey Mouse works just as well as Moses. However, a social club gathered around nice fables that no one's really convinced of is a hobby, not a faith. Christians insist that worship is directed to the real God who stepped into real history, died on a real cross, and really left behind an empty tomb. Or as the Apostle Peter put it, we didn't follow cleverly devised stories when we told you about the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and power. We were eyewitnesses of his majesty. Look, faith isn't a way of inventing meaning where there is none, nor is it built on any other patronizing definition that could include Cinderella just as easily as Christ. The gospel isn't a cleverly devised story. It's the truth of all of reality, the truth that gives meaning to our lives, our marriages, and yes, even our deaths. The fact that people in an increasingly irreligious culture look to the magic kingdom as a replacement for God only reinforces the kind of creatures we really are, incurably religious ones. Building lives around cartoons is disturbing and sad, but the problem isn't people who love fantasy too much. It's people who have nothing better to love, and a culture that tells them that they may just as well wish upon a star as call upon the Lord. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
All right, sticky and steamy, the watchwords today. Let's check in for the first time with meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The call for this afternoon, warm and humid with changeable skies, sun, clouds, thunderstorms popping into the evening hours. Any thunderstorm can, on a localized basis, produce damaging wind gusts, hail, and torrential rain. High temps, 80s to near 90, dropping into the 60s tonight. Tomorrow, not as warm nor as humid, some sunshine, 70s and low 80s. Cool for the weekend. Saturday starts cloudy, turns sunny in the 60s, and Sunday is sunny and crisp with high temperatures close to 70 then.
All right, thank you, Kevin. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster. Thank you once again for joining us. Let's take a look at some of the other stories making news today. Public hearings on the January 6th House Committee resuming today, expecting to focus on efforts by then-President Trump to pressure then-Vice President Mike Pence to overturn the 2020 election results. Pence eventually concluded he had no constitutional authority to do so. This week's congressional election of a Republican in deeply Democratic South Texas has some, including new Texas resident Elon Musk, predicting a red wave this November. Rice University political analyst Mark Jones says there are things for Republicans to get excited about.
This is a district that Democrats won by 14% back in 2020. The Republicans have now flipped in the special election.
However, he points out it was a small election with only 7% turnout. The district's boundaries are also being redrawn, which will make it harder for the GOP to hang on to that seat in Congress. It's called FaithX, an initiative to help churches be more responsive to their communities and to connect with their neighbors. Here's more now from Family Life's Greg Gillespie.
The FaithX project works with congregations and regional church networks using data-driven analysis to identify opportunities for churches to thrive. Executive Director Ken Howard says congregational vitality is the defining issue for the church in this generation, and that denominations and congregations will need to transform rather rapidly. The Episcopal Church this week announced that FaithX received a major grant to launch something called VIP, a Vitality Improvement Program for its small congregations. Howard says faithful church action will require a clear vision, accurate knowledge of their towns and cities, and a spiritual willingness to experiment with new or untried ways. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
Made in America Legos coming soon to a floor near you. Well, maybe not very soon. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, nonetheless, hailing plans for a $1 billion Lego plant coming to the Commonwealth. The plant, which will have up to 1,700 employees, isn't slated to open until 2025. Well, too big of a gap to make up.
New Photo Ready Candid by Revlon. Flawless coverage and natural finish.
Yes, cosmetics giant Revlon filing for bankruptcy protection. It comes as the company has faced challenges from upstart brands recently. Revlon sales have struggled as it has had to deal with supply chain issues and losing shelf space to new brands backed by celebrities such as Kylie Jenner and Rihanna. The company was founded by Charles Lachman and brothers Charles and Joseph Revson in 1932. From playing on the gridiron to serving God. Family Life's Brandon Dixon with more on a surprising move by a professional football player.
Indianapolis Colts starting safety Kari Willis has announced he's retiring after three seasons in the NFL to pursue a future in ministry. The 26-year-old said, quote, "With much prayer and deliberation, I have elected to devote the remainder of my life to the further advancement of the gospel of Jesus Christ adding that he's both humbled and excited to pursue the holy call that God has for his life, which brings him much joy and purpose. Colts coach Frank Reich said he, quote, admires and respects Kari's decision to transition into the next stage of his life and ministry, adding, my prayers will always be with him. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. More than 400,000 children are in foster care in the U.S. Focus on the Families, Helen Richardson was one of them. She spoke with our Tracy Lynn.
Helen, you were a foster child after your parents passed away. Would you briefly tell us your story?
Yes, actually, I entered foster care before they passed away. They struggled with life, with their choices, and that resulted in home not being safe. So we were bouncing between care and their care before they passed away. And then I lost my father when I was 3 and my mother when I was 6. And then foster care and kinship care, relative care, continued for me. There was times my foster families, from what I can remember and what I know of, were great. Some of my kinship care providers were okay. And then sadly, some of my family was also abusive, and that continued, you know, that struggle for me. But when I was 18, I aged out and started a whole new life outside of that.
And now you're helping other people at Focus on the Family when it comes to issues of foster care and adoption. Wow. Is it accurate that more than half of the children removed from their home and put into foster care stems from the neglect of the parents?
Yes, actually, I was just reading a statistic this morning that was showing about 63% it comes from neglect. That's the primary one, and that's what was happening for me.
It makes me wonder, do people just not know? I used to say I felt like you should have to get a license to be a parent because you need one to drive a car, and shaping a life is even more important. What are some of the other leading factors, would you say, that lead children to end up in foster care?
Well, what's behind that neglect is a bigger picture of communities and families and individuals. A lot of times there's people who have had generational problems of abuse, neglect, poverty, and then there's people who are just struggling because they might be well-intentioned, but, you know, be able to get food on the table, they've got to leave kids at home. And then there's times who are really in a bad addiction, and that's going to keep them from being able to be at home. Sometimes they're caught up in mental health challenges, and that affects how they parent, actually reality of not being able to parent at all.
Yeah, some tough stuff. And that's not something you get over quickly. You probably felt growing up that you missed certain things. And then how did you go about getting your emotional needs met?
I definitely missed things growing up. I was just having a conversation with someone about a child we have in our home, because as foster parents now, there's been some things that are definitely impacted from my time in care. And one of those is when a child enters our home, we have a lot of conversations. And one of them is, how would you like us to address and reference you if we're in public? And what would you like to reference and call us? Would you like to call us mom and dad? Do you want to call us the Richardsons? Do you want to call us Helen and Nate? Captain, we're open to a lot of things. No one's ever taken me on my royalty titles, but mom and dad and being able to call someone that has been so important. And most of the kids want that. They want that typical traditional experience.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to the heart of each of us and our longing to be accepted. And don't we get that from Christ? I've heard some people claim that Christians don't always do a good job of caring for kids outside the womb. You know, that's a hot topic. With more than 400,000 children in foster care, how can we as Christians show up to let children know they are loved and valued, Helen?
I'd say the first thing, and should always be anything that we do in our life, is go to our knees in prayer. Seek out God, seek for his clarity, for his wisdom in your life, and what your calling will be. Not everyone is called into the same path or journey, but everybody can do something. So start praying, start learning about what you can do in your area, and then figuring out a way to serve. Maybe it's as simple as, we just had something in our family where I had a fall and tore ligaments in my ankle. Mm-hmm. But I have a support group around me that, in our family, that I was able to make calls. We had kid pickups. We had a meal that night. We have someone who's coming in helping with yard work. All sorts of things that you may not have to be investing or trained. A simple thing of giving a gift card or just calling to check on someone of, hey, how are you doing? Makes such an impact. So it frees them up to do the work, or even just being in that child's life. There's so much you could do. And that's what God calls us, is to love our neighbors. And we can just take care of one another and give him the glory in all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. The process of adoption may be especially overwhelming to potential parents due to the lengthy vetting process. What advice would you offer to folks who are sensing the tug to help vulnerable children in that way?
I'm going to go back and set it again. Pray, start your education, and then just understand it's going to be a journey. There's going to be times where it just needs a little bit of flexibility and just staying the course and resting in God's providence and plan for us all.
Is there anything you'd like to say to single people that maybe they don't feel like because they're single that they would be great as a foster parent or an adoptive parent, but how might they be able to help?
That's a great question, Tracy, because two things. One, you still could foster or adopt. It's a little challenging and there's some definite things you want to put in place, but sometimes there are children that need and would be better for them to be placed with a single parent. I once was approached about a case where there was a young woman who really wasn't going to do well with a male in their home. And it was before I was married. And just because of things that had happened to her life, she did not feel safe around men and needed a home where she could be safe and then grow in that relationship of learning how to thrive in life. And then if maybe that's you're thinking, that's still not my call, there's tons of things that you can do as a single adult and helping others around. We have someone in our life who recently got married, but up until that point, she was just this amazing extended family member. She's our trusted source. Actually, one of our kiddos has only 10 contacts that are allowed on their phone, and she is on that list outside of our family because she made such an impact of just being around and loving us and being constant in their life.
Focus on the Family's Helen Richardson, who says resources are available at waitnomore.org. She spoke with Family Life's Tracy Lynn. You can listen to our Noon Report features online anytime at familylife.org. Just ahead.
You've got to come back with me.
Where?
Back to the future.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast from tranquil to turbulent. That's our weather story from yesterday into last night. Big thunderstorms with lots of hail and wind and lightning. That activity settled and moved away earlier this morning. However, the atmosphere remains ripe and unstable. Another round of thunderstorms coming for some of us this afternoon and evening before a cold front sweeps it all away, paving the way for nicer, cooler weather for the weekend. The call for this afternoon, warm and humid with changeable skies, sun, clouds, thunderstorms popping into the evening hours. Any thunderstorm can, on a localized basis, produce damaging wind gusts, hail, and torrential rain. High temps, 80s to near 90, dropping into the 60s tonight. Tomorrow, not as warm nor as humid. Some sunshine, 70s and low 80s. Cool for the weekend. Saturday starts cloudy, turns sunny in the 60s, and Sunday is sunny and crisp with high temperatures close to 70 then.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin. And finally at noon.
This is what makes time travel possible. The flux capacitor.
Flux capacitor.
Yes, the fictional flux capacitor, which propelled actors Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox in a time-traveling DeLorean in the popular Back to the Future movie series and made both of them and the producers a whole lot of money in the process. And you might say another cast member went back to the future to make a tidy little sum recently. Tom Wilson, who played Biff Tannen, Griff Tannen, and Buford Mad Dog Tannen in various editions of the series, recently sold off some very old but pristine copies of the movies. One, a 1986 VHS tape of the original movie still in the shrink wrap fetched $75,000 at auction, the highest price ever paid for a VHS tape, as far as anyone knows. Wilson says the urge to open that shrink wrap over the years was very tempting because it contained not only mint copies of Back to the Future 1 and 2, but also a documentary entitled Secrets of the Back to the Future Trilogy. Now he has very good reason to be glad he saved it for the future. And that's the world we live in for Thursday, the 16th of June, 2022. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.